welcome to the Dallas Soccer Show. I'm Dustin Nation, and I'm here with Tristan Vick. How's it going, Tristan?
It's going great. How about yourself?
Pretty good. Well, this weekend, FC Dallas faced off against the Colorado Rapids at home, and they battled to a nil-nil draw that could have been a 1-0 victory, but it didn't work out like that, and we'll talk about that here in a second. So tonight, we're going to talk a little bit about that game. We're also going to talk a little bit about the transfer news from FC Dallas and FC Dallas's business there at the transfer deadline that was at the end of last week.
New players!
Hooray! We've also got a trivia question for you, and you'll win the chance to get a shout out on our show. We're big spenders here at the Dallas Soccer Show, and so that's what we can afford. Then also there's some World Cup news to talk about today, and Tristan's going to guide us through that.
Cue the FIFA music with the Sepp Blatter being showered with money.
Mental images.
Yep. The fact you have one says all you need to know.
All right. So let's step back and talk about the game on Saturday night. FC Dallas fielded a 4-4-2 lineup with Maxi Arruti and Christian Coleman up front, and Acosta and Ulloa in the center of the midfield. What did you think about that lineup and Pareja's choice to switch towards that 4-4-2 away from his accustomed 4-2-3-1?
Yeah, so I think one important part of that match was Pareja going into it knowing that Colorado Rapids are having a really bad season and are very vulnerable in shipping lots of goals. And if they could create opportunities and be a little bit aggressive in the first half and hopefully get a goal or two, then they would be able to adjust back to their typical formation and really see out the match and control the game. And what you saw in the first half was a lot of attacking play by FC Dallas. We definitely won the possession battle. We had 37 crosses throughout the entire match, but it all came for naught because we weren't creating opportunities that either didn't get called back by the VAR or the video assistant, or that just weren't really threatening at all or directly at Tim Howard. So yeah. Well, I like the mindset.
In fairness, Tim Howard did make several fantastic saves.
I mean, I would agree, but I still think that our strikers need to be a little bit more clinical. And the goal, I'm still a little miffed about that. But as far as the lineup goes, you can't fault the way we were set up because we're going against probably the worst team in the Western Conference. So get a goal early, and then you can kind of sit back and control the match.
Yeah, it's a telling that as of today, their manager is no longer their manager. They've sacked him midway through the season.
Right.
But yeah, FC Dallas were on the front foot all night. They had 28 shots as opposed to Colorado's 5. 8 of them were on target. However, they couldn't put any past Tim Howard, except for the one that was called back by a video assistant referee. So yeah, 2 weeks in, 2 times FC Dallas has had a goal called back by the VAR. That's incredible to me.
So this is becoming not only something that obviously has always worked against us, but it's becoming something that I think needs to be clarified by either the league or FIFA, because last week, the decision was pretty clear. There was a foul on the goalkeeper.
Yeah, he kicked him in the nuts.
And then a goal was scored. Right, yeah. He kicked him where the sun doesn't shine. But this week, it was some random foul that they said wasn't called when this play began. And I think the league needs to come out and explain when the VAR can be used to declare that a foul's been called and when the play has to come back, because we clearly didn't have a foul or commit any infringements once we got possession of the ball. But because there was a foul to get possession of the ball, suddenly the entire possession is null. I think that's kind of ridiculous. If the referee doesn't feel that way and doesn't call the foul to begin with, I don't think that should be reviewable. Technically, that was a defensive play. It wasn't even an offensive tactic or an offensive skill that he used. It was a tackle.
Well, their explanation was that the offense or the attacking phase of play starts as soon as a team makes a play that causes the turnover, which I'll get back to that. But in this particular case, the referee is looking directly at the foul. If you watch the replays, he's looking directly at the foul, just doesn't even say play on or anything like that. He just lets it go. Then we march 75 yards down the field and score a goal. There's got to be some sort of statute of limitations. Otherwise, what you'll have is referees not making any calls. It's either a foul or it's not a foul. If we hadn't have scored, it wouldn't have been a foul because he didn't call it. It would have just gone down the field. So it's either a foul or it's not a foul. And otherwise, the referees are just going to sit there and they're going to like just try to let VAR bail them out. They'll make no calls and they'll just let stuff go, hoping that if they need to, they'll go back and fix it with VAR.
I understand what you're saying. And I hear you loud and clear. However, my issue with VAR is this attacking phase of play and the way that they can deem that to essentially come into play in any situation except for a straight red card. The issue I have with that is that that is not as clearly defined as the other aspects of the way they use it. So in our instance, literally the very first play that starts could be considered something in the attacking phase of play. I think it should be limited to only fouls that occur either off the ball when we are, I think it should be limited to fouls that occur when we are in possession of the ball. So when we gain possession, then the attacking phase of play begins, like a shot clock in basketball or something. And yes, I realize this benefits us, but like, I think that's the way that you should evaluate it.
Yeah. So if there's a foul that causes a turnover, it's either a foul or it's not. And then after that, then we start the attacking phase.
Right. Because what can happen is that theoretically, anytime the ball is turned over during a match, the referee can say, oh, I don't really need to watch that decision. Or I mean, I could watch it, but if I accidentally get that wrong and err on the side of letting the match play and there's a goal, I could review it. I mean, it obviously doesn't happen all the time. I think that that type of a situation needs to be further explained. It needs to be limited. It needs to be more consistently applied because that's all I got to say on that.
I'm for VAR. I think it's going to ultimately be a good thing for the MLS and for soccer. But I that attacking phase of play, I just don't buy. I think it needs to be, for as far as goals are concerned, it needs to be, is it a goal or is it not a goal? I think that the other stuff needs to be judged by the ref at the time and not go back.
Yeah, it's the only one thing I would disagree with that on is if they get an offsides call wrong, which most of the time would be a part of whether or not it's a goal. But like if, for instance, it's a breakaway of some sort off of a corner kick at the other end, and you have a long pass or something, and maybe they don't call the offsides correct, I would be okay with offsides decisions playing into it. But I agree. Make it about the goal, not about whatever before.
I'll go along with that.
Cool. So beyond that, we got screwed by the weather.
Yes.
And had a massive break between the 82nd and 83rd minute during the match.
Not if you watched on the video delayed broadcast on TXA 21.
I do think it was a good shout out for the FC Dallas Twitter account that they were taking requests of songs to play. And then people just started to ask for random songs, but they didn't really pick up on the theme of rain. I requested James Taylor, Fire and Rain. Didn't hear it. But it doesn't mean they didn't play it.
It's because they hate you.
No. I think it was just because they had a big queue of songs to play. But yeah, so we had this massive rain delay, which has happened to us now, I think, twice in the past two seasons. And talk about a way to really kill any sort of momentum you want to have in a match. One way to do that is to literally tell all of the home fans that, hey, by the way, you're going to get home 90 minutes later than you expected. So they all leave early, which I can't blame them, but still,
yeah,
really killed our momentum going into the second half.
Yeah, so it was a really eventful game. There was a lot going on other than goal scoring.
Yes,
a lot of players had good games. A lot of players had okay games. So we're going to segue into a section of the show that we're going to call Player Stock Market. And we're going to basically pretend that each player is a stock. And we're going to see who had their stock go up, who had their stock go down, and then who just kind of stayed right around the same. Tristan, whose stock went up for you in this game?
I'd be buying stock right now of Matt Hedges and Michael Barrios. For Hedges, it was his very accurate passes, 92.7% completion percentage, a lot of interceptions, as well as just strong play in general on set pieces. Got a yellow card, but I think you can't really fault him for coming back and showing a little bit more of that commanding presence. And then Michael Barrios, because literally passed, had dozens of passes that I felt were not only key passes, but was able to really unlock the defense and make some opportunities. He, for once, didn't disappear, was able to kind of slip behind the Colorado back line, and looked pretty threatening going forward. Had a couple of shots that, if he were a little bit luckier, could have been a goal.
Yeah, he was involved in almost every attacking play that I can think of off the top of my head.
I would wish that Hedges gets a little bit more involved in set pieces on the offensive end, and that we stop doing these short corners. So,
yeah. So my players that I'm going to be buying stock in, I'm going to buy stock in Hedges just like you. I think that he, a little early, he kind of struggled with the speed of Baji, but so did Harris and the whole back line. But ultimately, they kept a very threatening, speedy player in check. And like you said, he was a commanding presence in the back again. I think that he'd been lacking that the last couple times he's played for us, but I felt like he's back a little bit, hopefully.
Sure.
And the other player I'd buy stock in is Victor Ulloa. I felt like he had a pretty mature display. I felt like he was good moving the ball. He had good ball movement, and he made good choices whenever he would pass. He also was on dead ball duty. He was kicking all the spot kicks, and most of them were pretty dang threatening. He got the ball into the box every time, and in a place where the other players could actually get on the end of it, which can't be said for some of the other players who have taken spot kicks for Dallas in the past couple weeks.
No, yeah, I mean, I agree. I thought that Ulloa was able to let Acosta go forward more often and not worry about some of the defensive duties that he had. So that was nice to see. And you could really tell that he was getting closed down whenever he got the ball. So obviously threatening.
Yeah. So the big question with Ulloa, though, is was it enough to keep his starting spot when Guerrero comes back from suspension next week?
I think when Guerrero comes back, he'll be back in the starting lineup. But I don't think that should make Ulloa feel any worse about how he's been playing.
Yeah. Definitely put him right there on Pareja's mind whenever he goes to fill out that team sheet.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So how about players that you would be selling? Are there any of those for this game?
I've got a few. I think Roland Lemah is somebody that has moments of just good control, and it sort of shines with relative to the other players in the MLS. But at the same time, he gets the ball and he looks threatening, but he doesn't really do anything with it. And I'd want him to do a little bit more with the ball and be a little bit more creative if he's going to play up top like that. I would not be against somebody like, Mauro Diaz, or even Tesho Akindele getting a go at next match instead of Lemah.
Yeah, he played very direct that game and past a couple games, and that may not have been what was the answer for breaking down that block defense.
No, Colorado really did put a lot of people behind the ball, so it was pretty tough to unlock it.
Sure. Anybody else?
That's the only one I can think that stands out right now. I think it's a little unfair to criticize some of the players that had slow matches just because, again, you really had... I felt like the entire second half, people were just waiting for the match to get called because of Lightning.
Sure.
So players probably felt there was a good chance the match would get called for quite a while before the storms got there.
Yeah. I agree. There weren't a whole lot of players that really stood out as players that I would just go sell right now in the stock, in our theoretical stock market, except for Atiba Harris. I think that he's kind of borderline sell for me. He didn't really do a whole lot wrong per se, but he was just a little bit more sloppy than I would have liked to have seen from a veteran player in the back. He gave up that foul that cost us that VAR goal and may not have been completely necessary there. And there were some other times where he just kind of, he had a bad touch or made some silly fouls, but really, I mean, not terrible.
Sure. I think they'll bounce back next week. They're obviously very rested.
Yeah. Although it is going to be a tough match. We play Sporting Kansas City in the cauldron. So we'll see.
In the cauldron of Mercy Children's Park.
Yes. So we'll see how that goes. And hopefully FC Dallas can bounce back.
Or rather, Children's Mercy Park. Quite the cauldron name there.
Right. The reputation does not meet with the name of the stadium.
I guess I shouldn't really talk. Our stadium's named after a brand of car that's most famous car is the most boring car in America, the Camry. So, but we're open for sponsorship, Toyota.
I do have a buddy that works at Toyota now, so.
There you go. They're just down the road. Hear
that, Mike? Give me a call. The Dallas Soccer Show, your source of FC Dallas banter and U.S. men's national team news and coverage. All right, so there is transfer news.
Yes, we have new players. Play the news reel. Right off the wires. Okay, not really right off the wires.
A couple days ago off the wires.
Recently, exactly. Luis Gonzalez, which unless you've been on YouTube trying to find him, you've never seen him play before.
Where's he from, Tristan?
Venezuela. He played for the Monagas SC team that actually won the first Apertura title of the year in the Venezuelan First Division. It was their first time to ever secure a spot in the Copa Libertadores, which is the South American Champions League for 2018. The way that leagues in South America and Mexico work is you have an open season where you play a kind of a mini season, and then you have a closed season where after a break you play the mini season at the end, and they award two titles. Monagas won the first title. During that season, Luis Gonzalez had 10 goals in 24 matches playing on the midfield wing, usually on the left side of midfield. So, Dustin, will he be a left-sided midfielder? Left-sided defender, a wingback, forward? Where do you see him fitting in with FC Dallas? Because he's not a signee, he's a loan. So we don't actually own him yet.
But we could. It's a loan to buy, right? Loan with the option to buy?
Yes.
That's an interesting question. If you watch his footage on YouTube, he's a very attacking-minded player. And He, like you said, he scores 10 goals in 24 matches. That's good for pretty much, that's just as good as pretty much any of our attacking players that we've got.
Sure.
He's right footed. And so I would think that, you know, you put him on that left wing and then he's able to cut in to his right foot and put it on net. Mm-hmm. Maybe you come in place of Lamont, like you were saying earlier, that maybe you give somebody else a go on that left wing. Maybe Gonzalez comes in there and change things up a little bit. However, if you read some of the employees of SC Dallas statement, Carter Baum was on Twitter and he released a little vignette basically saying that he's a depth signing and that he's versatile, just like all Perea signings, and that he's someone who could even be played at left back. I have a very visceral reaction to that because he's so attack minded and because he's right footed. I really don't think he'd play well back on the left back position. I think that he needs to go up front and be a part of the attacking play.
So one of the things I noticed he likes to do is he likes to cut in on that right foot. So it would make sense for him to start out on the left. But it does not make sense in watching the footage and seeing what I've read about him to see him play in defense. I think our back line is set. I think the Grana, Harris, Hedges, Figueroa back line that we had against Colorado is our first choice back line.
No Zimmerman?
I think Zimmerman's a good player, but I wonder if the chemistry between Harris and Hedges weighs out in the end. We'll see. I mean, he may just not be fit. But so far, don't break what's working, and this actually works. But we just got done talking about how Lamar is kind of dead weight out there. I wouldn't be surprised if maybe we do a 4-2-3-1 with putting Acosta and Grezo in the hole there, and then having a Barrios, Diaz, Gonzalez 3 with a Rudy or Coleman up front, potentially. I also could see him just coming off the bench for the rest of the season. That being said,
I think that's where we'll end up.
Yeah. I mean, I think it will take some time to bed in, but I think that as a 26-year-old who's got some caps to his name on the Venezuelan national team, I wouldn't see somebody like that making a move to MLS without thinking they actually might get some playing time.
It's true. He does have some things going for him. As far as getting right into the team, he speaks Spanish just like all the other South American players on the team.
I think everybody speaks Spanish on that team, but
true,
not even just South Americans.
Okay, so that is a plus. He also is in the middle of the season, so he just played like I think the day or two before he made the move up here. So he's not coming off the end of the summer. He's not going to take any time getting fit. He's already match fit and playing matches. Maybe, you know, he'll take some time to get used to the chemistry of the squad, but he's got those two things going for him. And like I said, he's versatile. So maybe Pareja finds some other place to put him that he thinks that he works better in our team. So
yeah,
I don't think that we'll see him starting a whole lot through the end of the year. If he comes off the bench and is able to influence games, then maybe towards the end of the season, but hopefully by the end of the season, he's coming off the bench, he's influencing games, and if that's the case, maybe we'll exercise that option to buy.
All right, so here's what I think. With regards to signings, the big thing that I think FC Dallas has to really be kind of disappointed in the past 2 or 3 years is the number of players that have left the academy to go play for other teams because they either didn't feel they would get the first team slots, or they just felt like they weren't going to get that playing time. And so, while we have an attacking signing, I think that means we're going to see players like Reggie Cannon, maybe even Aaron Guillen, step up and play some big first-team minutes, potentially, going down the stretch. If we can right the ship, then maybe we don't need to have any further signings. And also, like you've mentioned before, Zimmerman, when he gets healthy, potentially gets slotted in next to Hedges. We're good to go. It's like a signing that we didn't even have to make because he's been out for so much of the season. So I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, time will tell. You're listening to the Dallas Soccer Show with Dustin Nation and Tristan Vick. So now we're going to do our first ever trivia question.
Trivia!
Grab your beer and saddle up to the bar for a trivia night. I'm going to ask a question and then in order to answer the question and get your shout out on our show, you will need to follow us on Twitter and then message us the answer. It is a blatant attempt to gain followers on Twitter, and no, there are no cash prizes, but let's have some fun with this anyway.
We're also willing to have the trivia question sponsored.
Wink, wink. Anyways. Okay. So Luis Gonzalez, you told us that he is Venezuelan.
Yes. And he's not leaving Venezuela just because he lives in Venezuela, which nobody would blame him for.
So prior to Luis Gonzalez, Dallas have had 2 Venezuelan players. Name them.
Breck Shea is not one of them.
No.
Okay. So tweet us, send us your messages on the Twitter machine. And we're looking forward to hearing those. We'll read whoever gets it right.
And the answer.
Out on the air on our next. We'll give them a shout out as well as, hey, you get to go down as the person who won the first trivia question.
First ever.
We've ever done on the Dallas Soccer Show.
The Dallas Soccer Show, your source of FC Dallas banter and U.S. men's national team news and coverage.
So, that being said,
switching gears,
what other news has come out about soccer in the United States today?
All right. Today, the 2026 World Cup North American bid was announced.
Yes. And only one stadium wasn't already built, which is a much better, or which is a big improvement on the past two World Cups that have been awarded, where most of the stadiums haven't been built that they announced, not just when the bid was announced, but when they awarded the World Cup. I think Qatar only had one of the eight stadiums that they'll be using in 2022 versus the United States that had all of the stadiums built except for Los Angeles.
It's a good thing, because I don't think we'd be importing too many North Korean slaves to build our stadiums.
That's right. Yes, not a good thing to be in the construction business in Qatar right now. So how would this work? So the U.S. or the United States, it's not a United States bid. It's a North American bid. So Canada and Mexico team up with the United States to host the World Cup. That will be the first year that the World Cup expands to 48 teams. And so you'll have 16 groups of three. And with those groups of three, each group will have two top teams going to a knockout round. So it's basically like the NBA playoffs, where like everybody wins, right? So two-thirds of the teams go to the knockout round. You go to a round of 32, and then you play it out from there. So we've got 80 matches. Mm-hmm. United States hosts 60. Mexico and Canada get 10 each. The only other competing bid is Morocco. I've not been to Morocco. I've had friends that have been to Morocco. They say it's a lovely country.
They have fantastic food.
They also said it was really, and great food, probably some good hookah, whatever. But it's blazing hot because I'm pretty sure the Sahara Desert either runs through it or starts right on its border during the summer. So I'm going to just go out on a limb and say that if they don't award this to the North American bid, then you really can lose all faith in humanity, because it'd be 32 years since a World Cup has been on North American shores. In that time, they've been to Europe and Asia five times, stopped in South America, stopped in Africa for World Cup. It's about time it comes back to the home of soccer, not football, to the home of soccer.
But hey, we've got FC Dallas.
That's true. I just think that it's about time they come back. They've got two stadiums in the Dallas area.
Right. Which ones of those are going to be figuring into this?
In my opinion, it should be the Cotton Bowl Stadium. It's a bigger stadium. It's a more historic stadium. It hosted the 1994 World Cup when it was here, but they will use the AT&T Stadium in Arlington for sure, because it's run by Jerry Jones.
Yeah.
Although
technically both of them are still on the short list, but
they're both on the short list, but this gets narrowed down. Yeah, this gets narrowed down before they submit the final bid. When they submit the final bid, then you'll see exactly which stadiums they use.
Sure. Okay, so Let's pretend I'm on the committee to choose the location of the next World Cup, or the 2026 World Cup. Sell me on the North American bid. What are the upsides here?
Right. So first of all, there should be an envelope under your chair that's full of cash. So there's that, first of all.
Are you Seth Blatter?
Second, no.
Or am I
no,
Seth Blatter?
I'm just a typical FIFA person. Okay. But secondly, I would tell you that the 94 World Cup had the most attendance of any World Cup to date. Also, we are a growth market when it comes to soccer still. To this day, soccer is growing in popularity.
Much like in Qatar.
That's right. Additionally,
that's sarcasm,
literally
folks.
Literally next summer, we could host the World Cup if we needed to. In 2003, I believe it was, the U.S. hosted the Women's World Cup for a second consecutive year because the Chinese had the SARS and swine flu outbreak in the middle of 2002 or 2003-ish, and they had to find someone to host the World Cup, and America was like, We've got lots of stadiums that don't do anything in the summer. So there's that. The other big upside is obviously that hosting a World Cup with Canada, Mexico, and America all contributing presents a very unifying message that, I don't know if you've turned on the TV lately, it would be a very welcome change of pace to what people are hearing around the world and at home and abroad, home in America, that we have some unity between borders. The last time you had a World Cup hosted by two different countries was with South Korea and Japan in 2002. And that World Cup was relatively successful, but because of just going between the stadiums, it wasn't, it has mixed reviews from what I've heard of people that attended it. Obviously, very thrilling. Brazil team won the World Cup that year, but it wasn't exactly a success from the standpoint of working together. Mexico has already hosted the World Cup twice. So this would be the only country to host a World Cup three times if they were awarded the World Cup with us. Bringing in Canada recognizes the Canadian contribution to the game, which is obviously very valuable with their MLS teams.
Shout out to Tesho Akindele.
That's right. And they hosted the Women's World Cup most recently, and that was a fabulous tournament, had great attendance. So I can only imagine that there would be just as good of attendance with the Men's World Cup. And their stadiums are just as big as America's. So there's really no downside to this. The cool. other upside, the last upside I would mention would be that with all the stadiums and with the attendance on the Canadian side, you have the expanded tournament. So if we do get three teams automatically granted a World Cup bid for being the hosts, it probably won't dilute it so much since we're adding so many more teams to the tournament.
Sure. All right. Like we mentioned earlier, this week, FC Dallas travels to Kansas City. Should be a tough match against a rematch against the Lamar Hunt Open Cup loss that we had up there. Hopefully, A, FC Dallas doesn't lose again, and B, Maxi Arrieta doesn't kick somebody's face in again.
And no rain.
And no rain.
Or lightning.
Or VAR.
Yes, please. Enough of the VAR.
Let's just get it across the line and be done.
That's right.
All right, folks, thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time.
Catch you on the flip side. See you guys.